Inside the Publishing Industry. Whether you're an aspiring novelist or an avid consumer of the written word, you may be wondering how the system works these days. How do booksellers turn a profit? How do authors earn a living? And how do publishers decide what books make it into the marketplace? I'm Keith Shortall. Today, we'll talk with publishers, authors, and booksellers about all these questions and find out more about how authors actually get published, whether they should use an agent, and what really goes on in the bookselling world. And we want to hear from you. Have you finally finished that first novel? Are you taking notes for a memoir? Are you thinking of opening a bookstore? We'll go inside the world of publishing today on Main Calling. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. It's one thing to have an idea for a book, or to even have typed out a few chapters. It's another altogether to get your work published. Today we'll learn the ins and outs of the publishing industry and explore some of the resources that are available for aspiring writers. Joining me in the studio, Melissa Kim. She's editorial director for Islandport Press, and she's the author of 8 children's books, 1 adult guidebook, and has written for children's magazines. Josh Bodwell, he was the longtime executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance and is now starting his new position as the editorial director of David R. Godin Publisher, a Boston-based independent publishing house. And Josh Christie, co-owner of Print, a bookstore in Portland. Josh has been a bookseller for more than a decade and is also the author of 4 books. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have dreams of getting published? What questions do you have about the business of bookselling? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, all of you, to the show today.
Thank you.
First, Josh Bodwell, congratulations on the new job, a big one at Godin.
Thank you.
What will you be doing there, essentially?
A little bit of everything. So there'll be some custodial work.
Independent businesses.
Yeah, exactly. I always joke that every executive director has to be able to set up and break down chairs.
Right.
So I'll be leaving the chair work behind. But truly, I'll be doing a little bit of everything. I've already started going through the backlist, harvesting the backlist some. So I'll be relaunching and reintroducing books from the backlist, also acquiring new titles. I'll be doing some overlap, obviously, with our managing director on the marketing of those books. And then, of course, once a book is acquired, the work of bringing it to publication. So the editing. We do all of our design work in-house, so overseeing that, working with the team overseeing that. So I guess kind of everything.
Everything, yeah. including the custodial stuff.
Exactly.
So in your former position at Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, you witnessed the fact that there are a lot of writers in Maine, some well-known, successful professional writers. Richard Ford just got a Lifetime Achievement Award, or will be getting it in August in the Library of Congress.
Yeah,
but there are also a lot of aspiring writers as well, people who would like to be Richard Ford. let's start with the approaches to getting something published. What's step one?
Well, I will. So just in terms of your comment about how many writers there are in Maine, in my time at MWPA, which was about a decade, starting in 2010, our membership went from 650 to 1,400. So there are more writers than we know out there. And you're correct that there are writers who are maybe retiring and for the first time thinking about starting a writing life and a writing practice. And then at the other end, there's Richard Ford and there's Richard Russo and Elizabeth Strout and all these incredibly accomplished, internationally known writers. So, I would say that sometimes we're going to be talking a lot about publishing, obviously, but there's sometimes a rush to publish that I see. We offer a lot of craft workshops. We also offer business of writing workshops, but we offer more craft. And we're always encouraging people to sort of adjust their expectations around their publishing life. sometimes people get in a mindset that they're not an author unless they're published, not a writer unless they publish. I don't personally ascribe to that. You know, I think we all have hopes and aspirations, but we also all have to manage our expectations. There's going to be one Richard Ford, right? There's going to be one Richard Russo. You know, Richard started as a young man publishing in small quarterlies and journals. And maybe if you're a new-to-writing memoirist, maybe less focus on publishing that 80,000-word memoir and sending out some personal essays for publication, chapters of that, reworked chapters, things you didn't use in the memoir.
Sort of like showcasing your writing.
Building. Rather than going right to, I want to be in hardcover with the top five publisher.
Yeah. We'll get to some of these strategies and options that writers have too a little bit more later on. But maybe your personal stories, Melissa, how did you go about getting published in your first time?
Well, I think what Josh just said was spot on there too. I started as a journalist, so I started writing for newspapers and magazines. So I had done a lot of writing that was in print. So I wasn't sort of desperate to get my name, my byline out there and be in print. My first real big job was writing for Scholastic News, which is a newspaper for children. And that's the only time I will ever have a circulation of 9 million reading my
wow.
byline. And I thought, it's really never going to go anywhere but down from here. And that was my first, one of my first big jobs. So it was just doing a lot of sort of work-a-day writing that helped me sort of by doing lots of writing, getting published in a lot of different types of mediums. So magazines, newspapers, children's magazines. I did work for all kinds of different places before writing my first book. And I think one of the hardest things for new writers, and I think what helped me in being a journalist first was kind of putting your ego to one side. And I think that's, you know, part of what Josh is getting at is that writing is such an ego-related business. And to detach yourself from the work and say, here's my work, but here's me, is a really hard thing for first-time writers.
Not only being rejected, say, by
right.
a publisher, but by the process of being edited
exactly.
also.
Exactly. And doing revision and getting critiques back and saying, you know, change this. And it doesn't mean, oh, you're a bad person. It just means that sentence could be better. And so being a journalist was great training ground for that because, you know, as you know, once you put your article out there, then everybody hacks away at it endlessly and it's no longer yours. But that's a really good training ground to say, as a writer, you can get revised and critiqued over and over again and to sort of not take it personally and to develop a thick skin is a really good way to start.
So you were already kind of swimming in the writing business, and so that
yes.
helped you. Josh Christie, what was your personal story about getting published the first
time? Yeah, the risk of repeating my colleagues here, it was very similar in that there was about a six-year spread from when I started writing fairly seriously, trying to write three or four blog posts about, you know, 800 or 1,000 words a week, doing that kind of consistently on my own, 2009, 2010, kind of the heyday of blogging, building a platform on my own there, eventually selling smaller freelance pieces, and eventually getting up to the point that I was able to write a manuscript for a book. And I will also just echo the import of, especially in that first book, a heavy editorial hand. The manuscript I turned in and what the book ended up being were quite different, and the book was much better for that. It was my real introduction, either after writing for magazines and newspapers and on my own, it was my introduction to the idea of a book, a finished book, being a very collaborative project as opposed to a very individual product.
Yeah. Josh Bodwell, though, for people who haven't had any experience, the person you mentioned who's, you know, retired but or maybe had a knack for writing or is interested in it, what are the kinds of workshops that you would recommend that are available to for someone to jump in?
So it's not just workshops. One thing we think a lot about, we have thought about at MWPA, is the community aspect of it, right? That you're finding your people, your fellow writers. So it's also about joining and participating in that community, that you're going out to readings at print where they've got a visiting author speaking and you're meeting those, you know, they're not just readers in the room, they're other writers. At MWPA there are, it was actually just Wednesday night, but every other month we have a gather event where 15 locations all over the state, writers are just getting together to have a drink and talk and share disappointments and successes. So finding that tribe and that group of people is crucial. You find a writing group out of that, a reading group. So that's, to me, just as important as then searching out, whether it's with MWPA or online or at your local library, searching out ways to become a better writer, accepting that, as Tobias Wolff, the great short story writer, says, we're always apprentices.
Yeah. You know, can you cite, you don't have to name names or anything, but are there examples of people who sort of emerged late in life and picked up an ability to write and an interest and became successful?
In Maine or in general?
Yeah, in Maine. Well, we'll start in Maine.
One of my favorite ones that's international is Penelope Fitzgerald, the English writer, who's passed away now, but started writing very late in life and won several Bookers and is amazing. There's lots of success stories, and just as every book has its own journey, every author has a different journey in terms of, you know, sometimes there are these like 22-year-old wonder kinds that I always think, who are these people? Damn them. You know, Hemingway at 29, what he'd achieved, you know, is amazing when you think about it. The most recent success story actually that I want to cite, because it kind of involves print too, the finale was at print, is Dave Patterson. Dave's not particularly old, but I think he was late as an MFA student. If I'm, you know, he didn't come straight from college in the MFA program. He came to MWPA maybe 4 years ago, taking one of our more business-minded workshops, which was about writing a query letter to an agent. Through that workshop, he refined his query letter, landed an agent. That agent sold his book, and a couple weeks ago, print hosted the launch party for that book.
All right. You mentioned two things I want to talk about, which is the role of an agent. Melissa, is an agent necessary in order to get your work published?
It's not necessary. It certainly helps. So what, you know, I have some both from surveys and anecdotal evidence. I think if you have an agent, you are likely to get a better deal. But for a lot of first-time authors, it's really, really hard to get an agent. So it's one of those sort of circular problems. You know, I can't get a book until I get an agent. I can't get an agent until I have a book. So an agent will – I don't see any downside to having an agent, but it is hard to get one. And I think what I hear from a lot of aspiring writers is it's harder and harder to land an agent now than it used to be, that agents are getting more selective and maybe relationships are getting more difficult, or that it's – authors are questioning the benefit of having an agent and thinking, well, you know, if my agent's not going to do this for me, maybe I'd be better off doing it alone. A lot of publishing houses will only take submissions from agents. Mm. So in that case, if you don't have an agent, you're cutting yourself off from certain publishing houses. So the big ones will only take agented submissions. So it tends to be, if you don't have an agent, you're tending to look at a smaller publisher.
And Josh had mentioned a query letter. Christy, what is a query letter, and what why is it important?
Well, actually, I think my colleagues here can speak to it better than me, since I was unagented and unqueried with my four books.
Which is an interesting angle, though, that
which
you should speak to.
Which is the exception to the rule.
Yes.
Yeah, the exception, but an important one, because I think it's about Josh's engagement with the community. There's often this, you know, writers can be quite introverted, and they're to get an agent, to get, you know, you have to participate in the literary world. Which isn't the easiest thing for some introverts, right? A query letter is it's basically an elegant way to say it's your elevator pitch, right? You're writing to an agent about, here's who I am, here's this incredible book I have that you're going to represent and sell for $1 million. And you're doing that in a very short amount of space.
And here's the market that it's going to reach and why you should, you know, here's how I think it could be marketed to sell well.
And, you know, we've heard these elevator pitches in the past where, you know, you'd say, well, it's like Carrie,
Blank meets
but
Blake.
Set. Right. Is that really used? Is that helpful to a publisher?
In a more elegant way, it is, yeah, because publishers think a lot about what are called comps. So these are comparable titles to your book. Now, you have to – I always encourage writers to be realistic about that. You know, maybe don't say to a publisher, this is the next Harry Potter. You got to publish it. You know, not something quite so extreme in terms of its international groundbreaking success. Right. But they do want to hear, you know, this is for readers of X, readers of Y. So those comparables are important.
So you don't need to deliver an entire manuscript if it's fiction, for example. Does that help you to say, here it is? You know, in a shoebox, here's my 500 pages I typed on my Royal.
I think that depends on both the agent and the publishing house you're going for. So some agents do want to see completed manuscripts. It depends on what genre you're in as well. So like if you're in a children's book area, that might be different. If you're writing fiction, it's I think for nonfiction, you generally don't have to submit an entire manuscript. A couple of sample chapters and an outline and a synopsis will suffice. some publishers or some agents do want to see the whole thing. So that really varies from publisher to publisher and agent to agent. I was just having coffee with an agent the other day, and I asked her, you know, what do you like? Do you like to take a body of work before you sign someone? Which used to be the case. An agent would say, I want to know that you're capable of doing not just this one book, but that you've got three great books in you. And she said, if it's a, she's a children's book agent, she likes to see three picture book manuscripts. If it's just one novel, she'll just take the one novel, but she likes to see the whole thing. So it's good to have a whole thing done.
Right.
I think, yeah, for
all right,
sure.
We're just going to bring someone in here briefly before the break. Caleb, who wants to share something about his publishing company. Hi, Caleb. Are you there?
I am. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Nice to hear this program, and it's a great topic. I'm so happy you're talking about it.
Well, tell us about your company.
Well, so I come from a traditional book publishing background way back in Little Brown in the 1980s before they merged with Warner. And what I like to tell people is, things have changed rapidly with consolidation, especially among the big publishers. So it's very difficult for an author starting out nowadays to get an agent, as you've been talking about, and then to get a publisher. So back in 2011, I founded a company called Publirati, which started as an ebook-only company because I figured that access would be easier for lesser-known works. And then it's morphed into where some of the books are available on the Espresso Book Machine, which is in about 200 libraries and bookstores, and you literally go in, and the time it takes to get a coffee, you have a paper-bound book printed. But my point, and the reason I wanted to call, is I am doing something different, and I wanted to do something different, and I don't agree with a lot of the ways, the rules of the current publishing industry. For instance, when I worked way back in the 1980s, publishers didn't give up control of what they were going to publish to literary agents. They actually, as a publisher, it was their responsibility to select new works, and that was a big part of the fun, was the artistic creativity involved in discovering new writers whose books, lo and behold, weren't like anything that had been done before, because if it's already been done before, why are we bothering to do it again? Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of my advice to writers is to not write something like what someone else has done, and try and find your own voice and write something that is startlingly new and worthy, and especially because there's so much competition from not from books anymore, but from Netflix and sure, other forms of entertainment.
Right. And lots more books, I guess, out there as well. All right, Caleb, thanks very much. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number to join the program, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Fresh Eggs Daily, a Maine company committed to helping you to raise the backyard chicken flock of your dreams. FreshEggsDaily.com and the Maine Bureau of Agriculture, connecting people with Maine farmers and real Maine foods. GetRealMaine.com.
There are 23 Democratic candidates running for president.
Well, I think I'm talking about issues that actually affect Americans day to day, and they get it. But one thing that someone said to me in Iowa, you're what I hoped for when I voted for Donald Trump.
My conversation with one of them, presidential hopeful Andrew Yang. That's next time on The Takeaways, Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
The Takeaway is tonight at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. From the Top is coming back to Maine. From the Top will be back in Maine this November with the goal of showcasing the best young musicians in Maine on their nationally syndicated radio program, which you can hear on Maine Public Classical Saturday evenings at 5. Are you interested? Know someone who might be? For more information, please visit fromthetop.org/apply. Again, that's fromthetop.org/apply, and thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Understanding the Publishing Industry. Joining me in the studio, Josh Bodwell, formerly head of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, and now the editorial director of the David R. Godin Publisher. Josh Christie, author and co-owner of the bookstore Print, and Melissa Kim, author and editorial director for Island Port Press. We invite you to join the conversation as well. The number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now on the line is Jane Karker. She's president and founder of Maine Authors Publishing. Jane, thanks for calling in. I'm clicking on you here. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Keith, and hi, Josh Christie and Josh Bodwell and Melissa Kelly.
Nice to see you, hear from you. Thanks for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about what Maine Authors Publishing does?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just want to say, because I might forget that this is particularly special that I'm on this show with you, Josh Christie, because not very many people know this, but Josh's late father, John Christie, was instrumental in helping me get my business started. So it's really special to be here. I started the business in my barn, and now that we've grown to be one of the largest publishing companies in the state, and John did live to get to see that, so it's special, Josh. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so how does it work?
Well, Maine Authors Publishing is a cooperative style independent press. Now, we are a pay to publish company, but that's very different than self-publishing. Our authors pay us for editing and design and printing, but we carefully vet our books and support our authors. We have training for marketing. We have a sales catalog and look and act like a small press. One of the things that I was listening to the interview earlier is I agree with Josh Bodwell. I mean, in some ways, we like to slow authors down. Unlike a lot of online, more predatory publishing companies, we actually require authors to come to an orientation to make sure that they're really ready to publish independently, because it's a big deal. It's like, you know, it's like a part-time job to really market that book.
Mm-hmm. Do you have
put a lot of people down?
Yeah, I was going to say, and also, do you heavily edit? Do you have an editing policy? How do you work that?
Yeah, we have a team of five highly trained editors, and it is required that books that appear in our trade catalog and under our imprint are edited, and also, by the way, properly designed. I think book design is also important. Mm-hmm. So we vet our books, but because we are not a commercial trade publishing company that earns money from selling books, the royalties from our books go to our authors, not to our publishing company. But that opens up a lot of doors for us. It allows us to publish books based on quality, not necessarily marketability, and some very specialized books. So it's a fun thing to do, and it's very different from what traditional publishing does, a little bit different.
What advice would you have for writers who are trying to figure out how to be published?
Well, I would, first of all, make sure that they look into all the options. You know, there's a lot of really good things happening in the publishing industry today, but there's also a lot of scary things happening. You know, there's the emergence of people who are not really agents, who are simply shepherding people to a pay-to-publish company, and offering things that are just not realistic. So my advice would be to talk to Josh or talk to the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. We have a open to the public orientation that we conduct on the first Friday of every month, and you know, only about 2/3 of those people end up publishing with us. It's just a way of finding out, you know, what to look out for and which way to go. It's and not to really jump into it without knowing what's out there.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jane Karker. And by the way, you're a neighbor of mine. I live on High Street in Thomaston, so I know where you are.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's a very small street. There's only about four houses.
I know. I can see your offices.
I don't know if you've seen a lot of construction going on.
I have indeed.
Maine Book Festival on the 24th, and we're hoping to see you there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Jane Karker, president and founder of Maine Authors Publishing. So coming out of that, I guess there are a number of options. We've talked about whether to have an agent or not. We've talked a little bit about self-publishing, some paid-to-publish options. But there are, I mean, there are a whole host of ways. I don't know who wants to start. What are some of the others, Melissa?
I could take a stab at that. There's you know, there are lots and lots and lots of publishers out there, too. It really depends on what genre you're writing in. And so my advice to authors, I have a couple of different types of advice, but the first one is to really do your homework. So you can, there are a lot of different publications that will give you a list of all the publishers, or find books that are similar to the ones you're doing, and find out what those, who those publishers are, and then what their submission guidelines do require, whether they take agented or unagented. And you can definitely find, I think, for any kind of book you're doing, there's a kind of publisher who's suited to that. It's incredible, really, how many publishers there are. They just might not be as visible as some of the big ones, you know, who are, you know, front and center. So do your homework, find out who's out there and what they like for that.
Isn't that what agents sort of help do, though? Or do they do
yes.
agents only work with publishers that will pay them or get paid, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that's true. Agents do like to work with the bigger houses. So yeah, and I think the agent will open a door to a house that's closed to open submissions. So they are, you know, they'll tend to go for those houses. So if you want to come to, say, like an Island Port or a Tilbury House, or, you know, a place that doesn't take, that will take open submissions, then you've got, you know, regional publishers, maybe things that are specific to genres like romance or fantasy or mystery. Many of those will be more open to unagented ones. So I think to not overlook small publishing houses is a good way for a debut author to think about, you know, looking at the small ones. We have a lot of people who will come to us for their first book, and then that will maybe launch them on to a career with a bigger publisher, or maybe land them an agent to go move on from there. So starting small is one option for sure,
yeah.
I think.
I feel like we're maybe a few years past the heyday of this, but crowdfunding of books, Kickstarter and
right.
other sources like that
yeah.
has led to a lot of books yeah. being published if people are able to find an audience and find funding that way.
I think that's still really, really strong for graphic novels and comic books.
Yeah,
a lot of people I know still do that.
And I know that, as Melissa was saying, that is a route of going that will also sometimes lead to your next book or even that book being picked up by a traditional publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have a great line of books at the store called Boss Fight Books, which started as a Kickstarter project and is now with Southern California Book Distributors.
Yeah. What about social media, publishing by social media?
How so?
Well,
the Twitter novel?
Did Stephen King try a Twitter novel at one point?
You know, Facebook.
People have tried that.
Yeah. I mean, are there reaching an audience, I guess, without going through the...
Well, this goes... Josh used this word earlier, and it's still a word that makes me wince a little bit, but it's descriptive, which is platform. Josh talked about building his platform. You know, and writing that blog and social media is one of the components of building your platform. That's really important.
But yeah. isn't one of the... I guess I'm guessing you would argue that one of the benefits of going through a publisher is the editing process that makes your work that much better sometimes?
so twofold. That the publisher is spending a lot of time making that book the best it can be with a team of people on it. Then they're making a product out of that book. They're thinking about who that book is being marketed to when they design the cover. They're having conversations to make sure that book gets reviewed well. They're, you know, that publishing isn't printing, right? Publishing is the act of bringing that manuscript to the public for sale. Anyone can go to Staples or Kinko's and have a book printed. Publishing is much more complex, and the editing is just one part of that.
Well, we'll talk about how the money works too, because I know that people are interested in the how that mysterious process unfolds, and it may be different for different.
Especially too, I think then the after all that happens, then the book has to get distributed, and I think mm-hmm. that's the biggest part of the industry that's often overlooked or not well understood by mm-hmm. new people. Thinking, well, once the book's at the publishing house and it gets published, then how does it get to bookstores across the nation, or how does it get to Amazon, or how does it get into the hands of readers at gift stores or independent bookstores all over the place? And that sales and distribution network, I think, is the absolute key to getting your book out there, which a lot of people don't think enough about. And so if you self-publish and you've got stacks of books or boxes in your car, then you have to drive around to every bookstore in the country and say, will you take my book?
Yeah,
and that's
right.
really, really difficult.
Right.
So that's one thing a publisher can do for you that it's very difficult to do on your own.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Monica, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Monica. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I am an established writer, and people send me manuscripts all the time asking, how do I get this published? And I will now forever just link them to this show, which is great. but I wanted to go back to something that Josh said at the very beginning. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Mom.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Monica.
Yeah, so for those who don't know who this is, it's Monica Wood, right?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
But I want to make a, you know, when people send me these manuscripts and say, you know, how do I get this published? I really think what they're asking me is, how do I find an audience, not how do I find a publisher? And I think it's important for any aspiring writers out there, especially I get a lot from people who are writing about their family experiences, and they just want people to read them. So I think what you've been saying, some people have been saying about online outlets and there's a guy on Facebook, on my hometown Facebook page, and most hometowns have those, and he writes these beautiful, just they're little mini essays about growing up in Mexico, Maine. And they're so well written and so good, and he has a huge audience yeah. on this Facebook page. So publishing itself is, you know, I always say writing and publishing are two completely different things. One is a business and one is, you know, your art and your soul. But I think it is important to remember that there are ways to get an audience without having a publisher.
Yeah.
I would totally agree with that. Thank you for saying that, Monica. You know, one of the other things I always, like, I've led some of the craft workshops, and my first mm-hmm. question I make everyone answer is, what is your goal in writing? And then what is your goal in writing this particular piece? You know, is your goal to have people read it, to have an audience? Is your goal to make a living as a writer, you know, writing this? Is it to get it published and get it sold? Or is it some, you know, is it a passion for you? Who is your audience? You know, to really think about why you're doing it and what your end goal is before you even start writing it. I think you need to know, well, why am I doing this? Is it just for me or?
You know? Monica, since we have you here, do you have a book coming out or anything you want to share with us?
I got nothing.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you will.
Not entirely true.
I'm going to say.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for calling
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Let's go to John in Jefferson. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. Good. I am a member of the Maine Writers and Publishers Association and self-published a book 4 years ago through Goose River Press in Waldoboro. But I've got a novel now, a political philosophy novel that I'm well into and not finished yet, but coming along. And I'm looking into, first of all, editing, and then the next thing would be finding an agent. And do we have people in Maine that are agents? I've been told that they're few and far between.
Yeah. Who wants to?
They are very few and far between, and actually one of the best ones is just retired. So without
her. Can you speak a little slower, please? I don't have perfect hearing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. There are very few, and there are even very few in Boston, which is the closest next place they would be. So one thing MWPA has started doing to sort of get over that hurdle is run an annual pitch conference. It's called Pitch, the last weekend of September. And this year, for instance, we're bringing up from New York 9 literary agents, and they'll be paired with 3 editors from Maine, from Island Port, Tilbury House, and Down East. And this is an opportunity. There's a couple different ways to do it throughout the day, but they're there for 8 hours hearing pitches from people who register for that. So you don't have to go all the way down to the Big Apple. We're bringing them here.
And so where again and when?
It's at the Glickman Library at USM, and it is September 28th, the last weekend of September. All that's on mainwriters.org.
Okay, great. John, best of luck there. Email from Greg, is it true that a recent Supreme Court ruling requires you to register your copyright for your book with the U.S. Copyright Office, and you only have 3 months to register your copyright once your work is published and distributed? I thought you only had to state your copyright in the text.
Yeah, not as far as I know. I don't think that's
no.
the case.
No. The act of creation is the copyright.
Right. And then I don't think there's – well, if that's true, that would be news to me. We register things, but we're not aware of a 3-month deadline. We do it on behalf of our authors just so it's mm-hmm. like a seal and you get the – seal from the copyright, but I've never heard of the 3-month deadline brand new.
This is probably where we disclaim that none of us are lawyers, but
to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break. To join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. 888-399-3566. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Fallbrook Woods, a Maine-owned assisted living community in Portland, supporting the unique needs and individual styles of those with memory impairment. Fallbrookwoods.com.
President Trump proposed a new immigration plan.
If adopted, our plan will transform America's immigration system into the pride of our nation and the envy of the modern world.
For our regular Week in Politics chat, we'll take a closer look at that and the rest of the big political stories of the week this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Money doesn't buy political outcomes, but it does buy access.
Coming up on Next from the New England News Collaborative, how Purdue Pharma worked to influence Massachusetts politics. Plus, how breweries have displaced diners as the new go-to stop for presidential candidates campaigning in New Hampshire.
She tends to enjoy the grapefruit-flavored beers. I'll let voters decide whether that's a good or bad thing.
Please join us.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about getting your work published and about the business of bookselling. Joining me, Josh Christie, author and co-owner of Print Bookstore, Melissa Kim, author and editorial director for Islandport Press, and Josh Bodwell, editorial director of Godin Publishing House. The number to call, 1-800-399-3566. I did promise to get into the business side of this, right? So you say you've got your book has been accepted. It's you're ready to deliver it. At what point do you work out the terms, and how does those terms usually work? Is there an advance, and then you get a portion of sale? How does that work, Melissa?
Well, so in a traditional publishing arrangement, you pitch the manuscript. The editor decides to acquire it. They in a big publishing house, they go to the sales department, and you do all these things in it. In the back end, many publishing companies require profit and loss statements before you'll even get the green light to go ahead and acquire. And at that stage, whether you're agented or unagented, then you'll work out the contract. And in most traditional publishing cases, there is an advance. So that's an advance against royalties. You'll get some bit up front.
Does that depend the amount on what they think will sell?
Yes, exactly.
So it could be $10,000 or it could be...
$1,000. Or it could be $1 million. I think, much like everything in this society now, there's this tier, right? And so at the very top of the pyramid, there are maybe 10 writers who are getting these huge advances. And then there's a small slice where there's, 100 writers who are getting bigger. And then there's a lot of people in the mid-list who are getting $5,000 and $10,000 advances. And then, $1,000 to $5,000 advances is certainly not unheard of. And I've read now that some of the smaller publishers are going royalty-based only. So no advance, but then you earn, once the book starts earning, then you earn.
And what sort of share do you get of, a $25 hardcover?
Well, so that's something maybe Josh can talk about too. But so it's a complicated. It's a good question. So let's say your book is a $25 retail book. Then if the publisher is selling it at wholesale prices to a bookseller, they might get, say, 40 or 50% off. And then if your royalty is, let's say you get a 10 or 12% royalty, you're going to make like a couple dollars on your book.
So you got to sell quite
a lot,
a few.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And how much then, Josh, do bookstores have to do with what books get bought? In other words, you're the sales part. The publisher may have, the agent may have a role, the publisher has a role and whatever, but it really... What you do is where the
We would like to think that is our role. That is the service we offer, and something we're proud to do and humbled to do is bring authors into our store, either physically or bring their books into our store and bring them to people's attention.
And because of the scale, so in other words, you're not a giant warehouse trying to appeal to everyone.
Right.
So you can recommend books that otherwise might not get as much attention.
We have room in print, which is about an 1,800 square foot store for about 20,000 titles, which is significant, but it's less than 0.1% of the books in print, so it's very, very small. I would be loath if I did not admit that you can also buy any book that's in print from printbookstore.com, our website. So that's all there, but we curate what we have in the store in order to highlight books that we think our customers will want to read.
All right, let's go back to the phones to Susan in Kittery. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from Kittery. So the situation is that I am a writer, an artist, and a poet, and a painter. And I put together my self-published book, my own creation, and hand-bound it, 200 pages. And I sent it to the Library of Congress, and they accepted it. And when I was in, and sent me back some number, when I was in Washington, D.C., I went to the Library of Congress to see my book. And they said it was down in the basement. Well, and I could see it on the internet, something like that. Anyway, the thing is, it doesn't need to be in the basement of the Library of Congress or anywhere. My book is very unique because I am a lifetime vegan. I brought my family up completely vegan. We've worked for animal rights, amongst other work.
Yeah.
And my book is poetry, photographs, writings, and documentations of our life as a vegan, not only in the United States, but when we traveled and worked abroad.
Oh, so this is kind of, I would have to say, it's probably, Susan is talking about a memoir of sorts around, which is an interesting point because I want to talk about memoirs. Will publishers pick up, thank you, Susan, by the way, will publishers pick up, publish memoirs of, you know, people who aren't necessarily famous, or does it depend on the story they tell and how they write, or does it have a shot?
I would say I can start with that. Yes, we actually at Islandport we do quite a few memoirs, and I'm probably the least qualified of all our staffers to talk about it, as is the common office joke with memoirs. I think they appeal to a lot of people, so we are doing one right now. It's coming out in a week or two. It's by this woman whose birthday was yesterday. She just turned 90, and she has had the most extraordinary life that really embodies for a lot of people what it means to be a Mainer or a New Englander. And she's not famous, but she, I mean, she is to us, of course, but she's not a household name, but she's written a column for the local newspaper for, I'm not sure, I think she's the longest standing newspaper columnist in Maine. And she's had this incredible life of trying all kinds of different things. She and her husband did every kind of job you can imagine, from chicken farming to long-haul trucking, and just making it work here. And so we have a lot of memoirs like that, of ordinary people who've done maybe extraordinary things in order to survive in New England.
And have done so sort of very quietly.
Right,
and this is our
exactly.
chance to,
but a lot of people can really relate to that. So that's why we think this is worth, it's well-written, and people like reading about it. So, yeah. So, yes, a memoir from a non-celebrity can work.
I'd be remiss not to mention that recent caller. Was it Monica Wood? Was that her name?
Yeah.
I mean, Monica is famous to us. She's not a celebrity. She's not a celebrity. It's not, you know, Lauren Bacall's memoir or something. But when we were the Kennedys,
right.
Which Monica was many books into her publishing career, all novels and one short story collection. But that book really broke her out to a new audience that fell in love with her and her family and discovered her fiction through that memoir.
Yeah, and one of the best-selling memoirs of the last decade, Wild by Cheryl Strayed. Mm-hmm. Cheryl had written before, but she was not a celebrity. There was no reason to expect that her memoir would end up being an incredible bestseller.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And educated, same.
Yeah.
Let's go to Clyde in Portland. Hi, Clyde. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to add another little thing to this. I'm a new author, and just taking it up since I retired and started with a memoir, and then I've been doing some middle grade fiction books for kids. But anyway, I started off self-publishing with Amazon first through their thing. But the problem with Amazon is they will only let you sell through Amazon. So I have found that Ingram Spark, Ingram is a big book publisher, and Ingram Spark, that's their self-publishing part of it. They're a big distributor. They will allow you to publish through them, and then they will distribute to you to bookstores, and you know, as well as Amazon and everybody else. So I've been doing it that way, and it's worked much better because they will take the regular discount, you know, to sell to bookstores, they take that from you, but you don't have any money up front as far as publishing. You get your manuscript all ready to go. And you send it into them, and they will then publish for you, so you don't have any printing costs.
Ingram Spark. Are you guys, anyone familiar? Yeah, they're all nodding, so they know this. Yeah. Well, Clyde, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it. Let's go to Gibran in Bangor. Hi, Gibran.
Hello. Yes.
Yes. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. First, as the owner of an independent bookstore, just like Josh, I want to say that Clyde's my new hero, mentioning, you know, an alternative to going to Amazon for publishing. But what I also wanted to do was to speak an add-on to what Josh Christie said about, you know, as bookstores, you know, being the next piece of after you've written a book. And there seems to often be an unintentional disconnect between a lot of self-published authors and what happens at the bookstore level. You know, there's tons of listeners to this program today, and I'm sure that a lot of people are going to be like, oh, well, you know, maybe this is what I need to do. I do need to go ahead and self-publish that book now. But, you know, as I think everybody as a guest on the show right now can say, is that, you know, there after the writing of the book and even after the editing, there are just Herculean tasks involved with everything else. And not everybody is so attuned to the marketing, the sales of their book to, you know, outside, et cetera. And I think there's a lot of research that really needs to get done. And it's not, you know, research is not everybody's forte. And if they want to just work on their art and their writing, that takes a lot of effort. But if your intention is to get that book in the bookstores, you do have to make sure that you are trying to understand that side of the trade. You know, and discounting is very important, how you're pricing something, and the knowledge that, you know, Josh said how many titles they carry in print. And, you know, you cannot face out every single title, you know, for untold amounts of time. You know, a lot of times books are just going to be spined. And the amount of books I see from self-published authors that have no information on the spine just tells me that they're not understanding that their book is just going to get lost on the shelf.
Yeah.
And the other thing I find too is that, you know, you want to support, you know, all these authors that are self-publishing their work, but when they are basically, you know, handing off their books, which they're, I'm sure, very proud of, to friends and family, and then want to see that local bookstore carry them, they've already sort of, you know, partly killed the market for selling their book. So I think they've got to kind of understand how to work that community in to support them and not just give away their work.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And we're almost out of time. Any final comments? Or I also wanted to provide in the next minute or so, are there any upcoming events that you wanted to mention, Red Letter Days? We do have a note that the Telling Room will be holding next week at Big Night, an annual celebration of youth writers. It's free, open to the public, Thursday, May 23rd, Westbrook Performing Arts Center. So if you're interested in writing or finding an audience in publishing, there's that. Any other things?
May 31st and June 1st, the MWPA is hosting its annual Crime Wave Writing Conference. That there are crime-centric agents at that, but also it's a place, again, where if you're in the crime writing community, to meet your peers, to meet your tribe, to talk about craft and business.
Yeah. Okay.
And rather than single out a single event, we do about 100 events a year at print, so a couple a week, all listed on printbookstore.com right when you go to the website.
All right. Melissa, Josh, and Josh, thank you all for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
Melissa Kim is editorial director for Island Port Press and the author of several books for children and adults. Josh Bodwell, longtime executive director of Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, now transitioning to a new position as the editorial director of the David R. Godin Publisher. And Josh Christie, co-owner of Print Bookstore, and he's a writer and author of four books. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Isaac Merson took your calls. And you can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.